Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange today. We are always glad for your time and attention. And if you'd like to take part in our conversations on the exchange, feel free. Phone number is here, 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. We have lots of theories about ways to balance life and work. One oft-repeated line goes like this: nobody on their deathbed ever said, "I wish I'd spent more time at the office." But how different would life be if we did not go to an office on a regular basis? Millions of people are already finding out. Telecommuting is more than a cute term. It's a way of life for those people, and could be for many more, says today's guest. Jason Fried is the co-author of Remote, Office Not Required. Jason Fried and co-author David Heinemeier Hansen founded 37 Signals, a software company. Their accomplishments include the development of the project management tool Basecamp. Jason Fried, welcome to the Exchange today.
Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you. Tell us about 37 Signals. It sounds like you began with one idea, but adapted over time.
Yeah, we started out as a web design company, so we were just doing websites for people. And we got kind of busy a few years later and needed a better way to manage all those projects we were doing for customers. And so, we were just using email to send things back and forth, which is what most people do. So we built a little tool that we use internally to manage those projects. Our clients said, "Hey, what is this thing? We love it." We told them what it was, that we made it. And then we said, "Hey," light bulb went off. Other people could probably use this too. Turned it into a product, called it Basecamp. And then about a year later, it was doing more business for us than our web design business. So for the past 10 years, we've just been doing software development using Basecamp.
So at that point, you said, "The heck with the web design. We can just do this more."
Yes, totally.
So exactly how extensive is remote work now? I mean, what are the basic numbers on the people who actually can or do telecommute?
Well, it's a little fuzzy because it's hard to really know what it means. So, there's a difference between people who do it permanently and some people who do it one day a week, 2 days a week. There's a lot of people doing it, though. A lot of people doing it, and it's growing rapidly. I mean, there's millions of people who work remotely, depending on how you define it. But what we see mostly is people working in a hybrid model where they come to the office a few days a week and they work from home a few days a week. And I think that's a really good place to be rather than feeling like you have to only work at home and not work, come to the office at all.
And why do you think a hybrid model is the best?
I think it's the most realistic. Best maybe is the wrong word. Maybe I shouldn't have said the best, but it's the most realistic for most companies. I think it's hard for a company to shift completely and say, okay, all of a sudden we have this office, all of a sudden no one has to ever come in again, period. That's probably an unlikely scenario for most companies. If you're starting a new company, it's a lot easier to start out completely remotely. But if you have an existing company with existing employees who come to the office, I think trying the hybrid model where maybe you work at home one day a week or a couple days a week is just a realistic place to start.
It seems like we might have been further down this track by now, wouldn't you think? I mean, the fact is that between email and ability to access lots of accounts and functions via the web from home, a lot of us probably could have made this move a lot sooner than we're even thinking about it now.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a big part of it, though, is just the momentum, or I should say, well, yeah, the momentum that's behind traditional management, which is that you only know if people are doing their work if you're watching them do the work. And obviously we know that that's not true, but that's how a lot of managers sort of perceive the world. And if they can't see someone, then they can't trust them. And if they can't trust them, then they can't work there. And so you got to keep an eye on people. It's sort of management through walking around or management by walking around. And I think that'll change.
I've heard that term at work, never from a person in a book.
Yeah, it'll change. I mean, it'll change. It's changing. But I think that's what it is. I think it's a human thing. It's not necessarily technology. This technology, like you said, has been around for a while. It's obviously getting better and better and better and cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, but it's still a human issue. It's a cultural thing, and that'll just change through generations.
So one of the figures you cite in the book is roughly 3 million people doing remote work now, which indicates still a fairly small percentage of the workforce.
It is small. It's small. But I still think that measuring it is difficult. Like, I've never been asked if I work remote. Like, mm-hmm. I wonder how many people actually report back on those things. And a lot of people do have a hybrid model, and maybe they don't consider that remote work. It's hard to know for sure, but it's a growing percentage. And I think moving forward, to me, the future looks very much like a future where a lot more people are able to work wherever they want rather than the opposite direction. So I feel like it's inevitable that 3 million is going to turn into 6 million, going to turn into 10 million, going to turn into 20 million, and maybe more.
Right. Jason Fried, there's an interesting convergence here. Apparently, as you and David finished the book, Yahoo went in the other direction.
Yeah, a few companies have. There's always going to be people going backwards. You know, Yahoo has been a pretty complicated company for the past, I think, 5 or 6 years. They've had, I think, 5 or 6 CEOs, maybe 5 CEOs in the past 5 or 6 years. So they're kind of mixed up. They're not sure who they are. And the new CEO, Marissa Meyer, decided that she thought it would help to have everyone together in one physical location. And we'll have to see how that plays out. I don't think that having a few people or a few percentage of their workforce not being in the office is the reason why Yahoo's had 5 CEOs in 5 years and has lost their way. I think the issues are far deeper. So what bothered us about it was that it sort of seemed, and this might have just been the media blowing out of proportion, it's hard to say, but it seemed like remote workers were sort of being scapegoats, that it was their fault and the company can't run efficiently if we have a few people working outside of the office. I just don't find that to be true. But again, let's give her the benefit of the doubt and see how it all shakes out.
That certainly was the impression I think a lot of people were left with. It's like, well, we just couldn't function as efficiently with all these people scattered around, so we had to have some people in the office.
Yeah, the thing is that if you look at the actual numbers, although it's not entirely clear what the numbers were, but if you look at the estimates, I think only 3% of Yahoo's population even or employment even works outside of the office. So it's a small number.
All right, we're talking to Jason Fried about the book he co-wrote with his partner at work, David Heinemeier Hansen. The book is called Remote Office Not Required, about working in places other than in the office. And we'll use quote marks for the office. We'll come back and talk more with Jason about the book and about the process, and you can join us as well. 800-838-3760, 541-552-6782, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Back more to talk about remote work with Jason Fried and you when the Jefferson Exchange returns in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking today about the concept of going to work at places other than a workplace. Jason Fried and David Heinemeier Hansen are the co-authors of the book Remote Office Not Required. Jason Fried joins us, and you can as well. Phone numbers here in the exchange, 800-838-3760 or 541-552-6782 or by email jx@jeffnet.org. This is a great turn of a phrase here, Jason, where you guys talk about the missing upgrade in trying to get remote work across is for the human mind. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's sort of what I was alluding to earlier, which is that, you know, the excuses are gone now. It's not about there's not enough technology or it's not possible. It's about management. It's about people realizing that they can trust their employees. It's about cultural changes. The mind has to be upgraded here. The people have to realize that when you hire smart people, they're capable of doing their work no matter where they are. The office is not a magical place where you go and all of a sudden everyone gets smarter and is able to do better work. It just doesn't work that way. So we all have to understand that, and that just takes an upgrade of the mind. It's not something that people are used to necessarily, but it's all very possible.
So let's delve into some of the issues with the existing structure here, because you point out that you say that work does not get done as often as it should at work. What are the reasons that work doesn't get done at work?
The biggest problem is that offices are now interruption factories. Basically, you go to work. This is what most people's days look like, right? You go to work, and you get there, and you're probably pulled into a meeting pretty quickly after you get to work. And that meeting might be an hour. And then the meeting's over, and maybe you have 15, 20, 30 minutes before someone, you know, taps you on the shoulder and asks you a question. And then there's a conference call coming up, and then you have lunch, and there's another meeting in the afternoon. And, you know, this is what people's days look like. They're very days are no longer – it's no longer a work day, really. It's a bunch of work moments that are strung together. And it's very, very difficult to actually get work done when you only have 15 minutes of uninterrupted time. And then you're broken off and you have to do something else and you're interrupted and you have to do something else and you get back to work. And so your day is just so fragmented that you can't get any work done. It's just like, think about it this way. If you woke someone up all night long, every 15 minutes you woke someone up, you would never expect that person to get a good night's sleep. Yet we expect people to get a good day's work in, even though we're interrupting them all the time. And that just doesn't work. You can't do that way. And so That's why people aren't able to get work done in the office, and they end up having to do work at home or on the weekends. Or maybe they do it at the office, but they get in really early or they stay really late when no one else is around. And that's a symptom of how bad offices have become.
It sounds like what you're recommending is time for people to be able to actually push back away from the computer monitor for a few minutes, maybe even more than a few, and think. And, of course, that kind of posture is probably suspect among managers in a workplace.
Right. You know, it's true. I mean, when's the last time, and I'll say you, but I'm talking to everyone who's listening right now, when's the last time you've had 30 minutes just to think at work? Just to think. I mean, it's so incredibly rare, and creative work takes thinking time. It takes a moment away from the actual task of the work itself just to sit back and have ideas come into your mind and to sort of churn through some stuff in your brain and then get back to work. It's such a rare thing today, and it's so sad that that's the case. I hope that offices don't continue down this trend. I'd love to see offices become more like libraries and have more library rules, which is, you know, when you go into a library, you understand that, you know, there's certain decorum. You know, you're supposed to be quiet. You're not supposed to interrupt people. You know, people are studying. You know, people are learning. You know, people are thinking. And so people are respectful of that. That's how I'd like to see offices become. They should be more like libraries, a place to go to learn, to think, to work quietly, privately. And then there's, of course, rooms and libraries where you can go and have full-volume conversations with other people if you need to collaborate. I just like to see that become more the model of the future office rather than the direction it's going today.
So in essence, our work would become more like what happened in college, for example. We'd go to the library for some stuff, but we'd go home and do our studying and our paper writing by ourselves.
Yeah, I think it's a good model. I really do. I think it's a very valuable model. It's a very well-tested model, and I think people understand that. And I just don't think that I've been asking people this question for 10 years, where do you go when you really need to get something done? And almost nobody says the office. And that, it's a terrible thing that that's the reality of the situation, but it is.
So commuting itself, you have a pretty good riff on commuting in the book, Remote Office Not Required. Did you ever do it yourself?
Yeah, I did. Not a whole lot, though. I've always tried to live close to where I worked because I hate the commute. I don't like traffic. I love driving, but commuting is not really driving.
No, it's sort of like parking over and over again.
Yeah, exactly. So I've tried to avoid that as much as possible, but I've had meetings and whatnot out of the office at like 4 o'clock and to have to fight with rush hour traffic just, you know, a handful of times makes you realize just how bad other people must have it when they have to commute all day long. So I just think it's very expensive. First of all, commuting is very expensive, not only in money, but also in time. It's very frustrating. It's a terrible thing to start your day off stressed out because of traffic on the highway. And it's a terrible thing to go home at the end of the day and be stressed out. It's not good for anybody. I recognize that some people enjoy the commute when they take the train or the bus because they have, you know, let's say an hour to themselves to read a book or to do something like that. But to me, that's another signal that they're trying to do that before they get to the office because they know at the office they won't be able to do that sort of thing. And so it's another symptom of offices being a bad place to actually do work.
You know, it seems like we've been talking about escaping the 9-to-5 kind of workplace for quite some time. In fact, I remember ads in the New York subways in the 60s urging people to get out of the 9-to-5 crowd. Have we even resisted the idea of flexing our schedules at all?
Wow. You know, I think the whole 9-to-5 thing is, I understand why it's in place, obviously. But I don't see how anyone who's reasonable can really think that every person who works is efficient between the same hours of the day. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me. Everyone's a little bit different. Some people are more creative at night. Some people are more creative in the morning. Some people get a little bit tired in the afternoon. They want to take a break. Like, you know, my feeling is that people should be allowed to work whenever and wherever they want as long as the work gets done. What matters is the work, not the hours, except if someone's spending too much time working. We don't want overwork. That's definitely a no-no. But as far as, you know, when you put in your 40 hours a week, if it happens to be at night or in the morning, or you work for 3 hours during in the morning and then you take a 3-hour break during the middle of the day and then you come back and work at night, who cares? Why does anyone really care? If the work is what matters, the time it gets done doesn't really matter. At least that's my perspective. Again, I understand why the 9-to-5 thing exists, but I hope that flexibility returns In a big way, and we don't continue to do this ridiculous 9-to-5 thing.
There's a section of the book called The New Luxury where you redefine luxury. It's not necessarily having the great office in a top floor of an office building and the Lexus and all that stuff. But one of the things mentioned here is if all the family members you're close to live in a small town in Oregon, then why are you still stuck on the other coast? Which one of you has family members in a small town in Oregon, or is that just an example?
That's just an example. That's an example. But we have, you know, some of our employees work on farms. A couple of our employees have, you know, 10 acres or 15 acres, and that's their choice. And to them, that's the luxury that they want in their life. And they want to have that and also be able to work at a great company and do great work, you know, and work with great people. It's unfortunate that most people don't have that opportunity. If you want to work in a tech job, for example, if you're a software developer or a designer or just someone who likes technology, most people feel like they have to end up working in one of the major hubs or they have to work near a major city. That's just unfortunate. You shouldn't have to work in a physical location to do a certain type of work, unless, of course, it's something like factory work or, you know, you're a server at a restaurant or you work in retail where you have to deal with the public. But all information jobs, all jobs that are done over the computer or via paper, all these things can happen anywhere. And so it's such a luxury for people to be able to decide where they want to live. And maybe they want to live somewhere for 2 years and then move somewhere else for another 2 years, move somewhere else for another 2 years and not lose their job. That's a huge luxury to be able to have, and I'd love to see more people have that opportunity.
So at 37 Signals, for example, where is your office and where are your workers?
We're based physically in Chicago. We have 40 people in the company, 27 of which work outside of Chicago in about 25 other cities around the U.S., also in Canada, some over in the U.K., some people in Germany, someone in Russia. We have people all over the place. But even the 13 people who work in Chicago, they don't always come to the office. So we have that hybrid approach I talked about earlier, and this includes me. In fact, I'm doing this call from my home right now. So I work at home half the week, or if I go into the office, I'll work at home the first half of the day, and then I'll go to the office the second half of the day. So hybrid doesn't just have to mean picking between days. It can also mean picking between shifts of the day, different times of the day. So we're based all over the place. I mean, one of our best programmers lives in Idaho. One of our best designers lives in Oklahoma City. We would never have access to these people if we decided that we can only hire people within a 20 or 30 mile radius of our home office.
We're talking to Jason Fried about working in places other than in the standard workplace. The book he co-authored with his work partner, David Heinemeier Hansen, is called Remote, Office Not Required. You can join our discussion on the exchange. Maybe you're telecommuting already or wished you could have in years past or wish you could still. Join us at 800-838-3760 anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, we're at 541-552-6782. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Let's take a call from Jamie in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Jason Fried.
Oh, good morning, Jeffrey. Good morning, Jason. Well,
I guess it
might be afternoon as far as Jason's concerned, because since he's talking from Chicago. So anyway, I was just going to mention, imagine a world, Jason, where somebody actually trusted you to take a field service vehicle and go to some places to fix something called a color television set. Field service. Well, you would have to rely and trust that the guy that was doing the field service would be the one that would be going over to fix the TV set and such like that. And back in the day, I'm saying because I'm a dinosaur here, they had this thing called a pager where you'd be on call for your 8 hours worth. And, well, Jeffrey, if that makes any sense to Jason, basically what you did was you had to trust a lot of people and there was a lot of paperwork going on. What is the evolution of that to this day as far as Basecamp is concerned? And I'll take his responses off the phone if that makes any sense to him.
It does. Right, thanks, Jamie. Appreciate that. So what you're saying then is that the people like TV repair people used to travel around, certainly from a central office, and were trusted to do the work. So why do we seem to have so much trouble trusting other people these days with jobs that have traditionally been in offices?
The weirdest thing about it is that most companies already trust people. They trust their lawyer. They trust their accountant. They trust their payroll. They outsource a lot of things, and we trust these other companies, yet we don't trust our own employees. It's so weird. Like, you know, most of your accounting probably gets done by people, in most small businesses at least, so if they outsource this stuff, it gets done by someone you've never met. Payroll, we use a company called Paycheck to do our payroll. I've never met the people who do our payroll. They do a great job. I've never met them. and I trust them to do it. You know, why wouldn't I trust my own employees who I hired, who I talked to, who I've met to do great work? It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, I do trust them, obviously. That's why we have this arrangement. But many companies will outsource some work but won't trust their own employees, and it just doesn't make sense to me. So I would just love to see people put more trust in the people they hire. It's also a great way to make sure you're hiring great people, because trust then becomes a core bit of hiring criteria and not just skills. You know, you got to find good people who can work remotely, who have a sense of structure and self-organization that maybe some other people might not have. And with those additional skills, you get better people.
All right. So let's go down that pathway, because I'm curious about how you obviously are putting a slightly different set of criteria on people who can work remotely. But for that matter, how do you interview them? Do you still fly them to Chicago so you can meet them face to face and get whatever nonverbal impressions you get from people in person?
Sometimes we do that. Depends on the kind of person we're hiring and where they are. But for example, if we're hiring a graphic designer or something at our company, we'll often, and they're not in Chicago, we'll often fly them in and have them go to lunch with a few of the other designers who live here in Chicago. And just to get a feel for, you know, for who they are, in person. But the thing is that while that's valuable and it's a good thing to do, and we try to do it as often as we can, you can get like 98% of the way there by just doing some video conferencing, using Skype for free. You know, just set up a Skype call, video call. Most people who have laptops or even iPads or iPhones these days, they all have cameras on them. And you can get really, really, really close by just doing a Skype call, video call. It's not the same, but it's real close. And so that's a good place to start. Flying people in can be expensive, especially if you're trying to decide between, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 people. It can be very expensive. So I would encourage people to try and use other tools first that are relatively free and really, really pretty close to being there. And then if you absolutely just can't decide, then, you know, fly a person or two in for $100. It's totally worth it.
So there's a whole section on the excuses that you certainly anticipate and have heard, I'm sure, from lots of managers. The number one probably, they'll just be distracted at home. And I know from doing occasional work at home myself that that's where my people and my stuff are. So it's hard not to get distracted. So what's the general answer for that?
Well, okay, there are distractions everywhere. So let's just level with each other about that, of course. The difference is that when you're at work, the distractions are very hard to ignore because there's certain expectations that you must be available. If someone pulls you into a meeting, it's very hard to say, no, I'm not going. If your phone rings, it's very hard not to answer it. Like, there's just certain things. Plus, there's a lot of other things going on, ambient distractions, like the phone ringing and people walking around all over the place and people calling your name. And just the fact that there are people around doing their work, and their work might be different than yours. For example, if you're a creative, let's say you're a writer, and you sit near the sales team, well, the sales team is probably on the phone all day, moving around, making a lot of noise. It's very difficult. You basically cannot zone out of that distraction. But at home, if you're on your own, or if you have an extra bedroom or more, you might work, or the basement or something like that, you have much better control over the distractions in your life. I mean, if you want to go sit on the couch and watch TV, you know, that's up to you, but no one's forcing you to do that. So it does take a little bit more discipline, but you're more in control of those distractions than you are at the office, where there's just a bunch of people doing a bunch of things and you have no control over what happens and where they're doing it and what they're saying and how much noise they're making, et cetera.
All right, and then there's the flip side that you alluded to earlier, which is how do you stop people from working too much at home? I mean, if the office is always right there, their desk, their laptop, all the things they need are right there in front of them, well, you know, there is that one thing I was just thinking about and I need to get to. What stops them from making a regular pilgrimage into the whatever area they designate as their office space?
It's tough, and, you know, it's funny because a lot of people think that remote workers are going to be slacking off, that you have to worry about them slacking off and not working, but really it's the opposite. It's overwork, because just like you said, your office is your home, so you're always around. It's really easy to pick up the laptop and do some work. So that's really a manager's job. This is one of the unique jobs for a manager when you work remotely, which is to make sure that people aren't being overworked, and that they're not being stretched too thin. And there's a few ways to detect that. I mean, you can first of all, you can just ask, you know, I noticed you filed something, you sent me an email at 8 p.m. last night. You know, Were you working all day, or did you take some time off during the day and then got back to work at 8 p.m.? Because if you did that, that's fine. But if you've been working since 8 a.m. and still 8 p.m. and you're sending me stuff, like that's a problem. Let's make sure that that doesn't happen, because I don't want you to burn out. You don't want to burn out. So it's about the manager being a little bit more aware of when things are happening, how often things are happening, and if a pattern is detected, just bring it up with the person and let them know that, you know, the expectation is not that you work more than 40 hours or whatever your expectations are. And that it's tough to do that, to break off from work at home, but, you know, it's good to also have separate places at work and home. So for example, if you work at home, it's probably not a good idea to work from the couch, because the couch is also maybe where you watch TV, and that starts to blur the line. But if you have a second bedroom or even a big closet or a basement or something, and you dedicate that to your workspace and you don't hang out in there any other time except when you're working, that's a really good way to limit the crossover of work and life.
I'm sorry, I'm just giggling because we actually have a basement office here. So we complain sometimes about working in the basement, but here you are recommending it for home. But it makes sense.
Maybe.
I get you here. Maybe, yes. Jason Fried, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the book he co-wrote with his partner at work, David Heinemeier Hansen, Remote Office Not Required. We'll come back and talk more with Jason and take your phone calls and emails when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest today is Jason Fried. He and David Heinemeier Hansen are the founders of the company 37 Signals, a software company that developed the project management tool Basecamp. They are also the co-authors of Remote Office Not Required. Jason Fried joins us, and you can too, as we talk about telecommuting and working in places other than the quote-unquote office. 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. By email, jx@jeffnet.org. Our email box delivered this from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. He says, some years back, I worked for Daimler Chrysler Aerospace for more than a year. I knew I had a desk somewhere, and even though I lived a mere 1 hour away, I saw my desk as it was only once at a company Christmas event. I worked with on-site people and other remote engineers on the phone in a much more focused way and much more efficiently than it could ever have been possible in a huge corporate cubicle setting. In the process, by the way, I saved the company many millions in useless on-site procedures. That, again, from Wolfgang in Sunny Valley. This is a fairly common story, I gather, Jason.
Yeah, when people work at home, they actually get a lot more stuff done. And this is one of the reasons why companies should love to allow their workers to work from home. People are more efficient. There's less wasted time. Everything is more work-focused because there's less sort of office politics happening and fewer meetings and just fewer wasted moments that happen. I mean, you just really think about cataloging your day at the office. It's so full of wasted moments, and those things are pretty much eliminated when people work from home. So I hear this all the time. People always say, I get more stuff done. And something you'll notice is that even people who aren't allowed to work remotely technically, they might take a sick day or something one day, and they'll sit down in the afternoon when they maybe start feeling a little bit better, and they'll get to work, and they'll realize they got so much more work done in those like 3 hours in the afternoon they normally would get in a full day's work at the office because of all the interruptions that happen at work.
You pointed out the areas that obviously are not well developed for this, like retail or restaurant work, things like that. Obviously, we have to come to the radio station to do the program itself. But are there particular kinds of work that you and David have figured out are best, kind of work and workers that are best for telecommuting, working remotely?
Yeah, I think any job that happens through a computer, happens over the phone, happens on paper, you know, those sorts of jobs that are information-based, consultants, services, anything where you don't actually have to truly physically be in a place, these things can be done remotely. Some are easier than others to do, but even hard stuff, things like, you know, evaluating some code, software code, or, you know, running a demo of something, or like there's all these tools now that exist where you can just share someone's screen from 8,000 miles away and work and, you know, co-work with them over a computer. So all these things that you thought you really need to sit in a room with somebody and evaluate a design and critique something, you can do all this stuff virtually these days. That said, I think there's also certain personality types that do fit better with remote working. This is not for everybody. It's also a matter of combining personality type and location. So, for example, if you're really extroverted, you're not going to enjoy working from home in an isolated environment. But you might enjoy working remotely at a co-working space where you can maybe rent a desk every day or every week or every month, or working at a coffee shop. So if you need that energy, you can still be an extroverted person and work remotely and have that energy there. But if you're sort of an introverted person who enjoys sort of quiet and private spaces and not having people around all the time, you're probably not going to work well remotely if you find yourself working in coffee shops or working in co-working spaces. You're probably better off working at home. So it's a matter of balancing your own personality types, the surrounding, the environment where you work, and knowing yourself really well. Also making sure that you're pretty well structured and you're organized. I think if you're sort of scattered and not really an organized person, it's harder to work remotely because you sort of miss a little bit of that enforced structure that would happen at a physical office.
And, of course, you know, working at home, a manager's not going to be there to say, hey, clean up your desk, or, you know, I need to see at your desk more often, blah, blah, blah. But this gets back to another major management question is, if you're in a company that does maintain an office now and is willing to consider more remote work, what process do you go through to decide what work and what workers can move outside the boundaries of the office? Because, as you pointed out, some people are good at this and some are not.
Yeah, baby steps. Very, very small steps. The first thing I would say, I'll step back here. I think everyone at a company should have the option to do this. I think it's dangerous to just say, like, hey, these three people seem like they might be a good fit. Like, mm-hmm. these three out of 100, let's try these three. Because that's setting up a really weird situation. I think what's best is to, if you're willing to take this journey, and you're willing to allow it to try this at your company, the best thing is to make it available to anybody, all right? But what you can do is you can say, let's start really, really small. So let's say the first Thursday of every month, anyone who wants to is allowed to work from home. Just one day a month. Like, let's see how that works. And what you'll find is that the world doesn't end and the company doesn't go out of business. And, in fact, people love it. And then maybe you can say, okay, now let's say the first two Thursdays of the month, or every other week pick a day or something like that. And then maybe you stagger days and just start really small, but give everybody the opportunity. And this way no one feels forced to do it, and you're not leaving anybody out. Everyone has the option to do it. And I think that's the best way to start, because if you try and take a really deep dive and just send everyone home for 2 weeks or something, that's just not going to work. And no one's really going to, that's an unrealistic scenario. So start small, but make sure that the opportunity.
Whoops. Jason Fried, you're still there?
Opportunity.
Oh, there
everybody.
We go. I'm sorry. Can you say your last sentence or so again?
Yeah, sure. I think the key is to make sure that every single person in the company has the same equal opportunity to work remotely if they want, and it's just not a good idea to select just a few to try a test with.
Okay. Let's take a call here from Jim in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Jason Fried. His book is Remote, Office Not Required.
Yes, good morning. Person like myself, 72 years old, but knew from the time he was 11 years old he was going to be in some sort of sales. And I kind of understood that old adage, anytime two people meet, somebody is selling something to somebody. Another thing to take into consideration is what the word outsourcing means. It doesn't mean sending a thing to, you know, another country. But there are morning people and there are evening, you know, night people that can do their best work. And if people can work either in groups, online, whatever, a lot of them are more positively equipped to communicate with other people at literally in different time zones. I'm one of these that goes to bed early, wakes up early, with a solution to a problem in my mind before I even get up, or a solution is that I really need to ask somebody for advice, and I know, you know, that will solve my problem. But sales is a little different than just, you know, creating something in an office, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Yep. Thoughts on that, Jason?
Yeah, I agree. Couple things. Actually, I'll just say one thing about that. The time zone thing is a really interesting point, because when you do work remotely with people, you know, you may not all overlap the whole day. And so what we always suggest is that the people you do choose to work with on a project, let's say you're a company of 50 people and there's five of you working somewhere or on something together, you should have at least 3 or 4 hours of common overlap where you're able to contact each other in real time to discuss things. And then you also have plenty of time on your own where no one else is around to do that work. That's important. What you don't want is you don't want one person working on something and then their partner on the project being 12 hours away where there's no overlap at all. And that's one of the reasons why outsourcing software development to places like India is such a problem, because there's no overlap. And it slows things down tremendously because there's like a full 24 hours of feedback cycle instead of being able to get feedback really quickly. So you have to be very careful about that.
We have another email here from Scott in Ashland. He writes, I have been telecommuting from Ashland to my office at a nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C. for nearly 7 years. I agree strongly with Jason's points about the value of this option for workers and their employers. I'd also strongly emphasize a point just made by Jason, the need for the telecommuter to have a dedicated professional office space in the home, ideally one used exclusively for the job. Having that space is essential to maintaining a separation between work life and home life. When in the office, one is working, albeit with the same kinds of interruptions that might occur in an office, such as emailing a radio program. When in the rest of the home, one is at home. It is easy to make the transition, but it is a transition nonetheless. The telecommuter is not working 24 hours a day just because his office is right down the hall, and he's not hanging out at home when he's in his office. That again from Scott and Ashley.
You have to be careful. It takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it takes practice to make sure to make that work. And by the way, if you don't have extra space, not everyone has extra space at home. Some people work in or live out of a one-bedroom apartment or even two bedrooms, but they're used. You know, one thing you can do these days is look for a co-working space. These are popping up all over the country, all over the world. A co-working space is basically a space where other people who work remotely get together and work together by buying a desk on a daily basis or a weekly basis or a monthly basis. So it's sort of an office away from the office, but you're not working with other people that you work with. You're working with other people who work doing other things, and so there's less distractions because of that.
It's sort of like the equivalent of the social situation where people are sitting next to each other on the subway and they're talking on their cell phones to people not sitting next to them. So here you are sitting in an office with people working on totally different things and communicating with people who are not nearby.
Yeah, a key thing here too is that there's different kinds of sound. This is a sort of subtle point, but a lot of people are very distracted when they're working in an environment where other people around them are talking about the things that are already in their head. So, for example, if you're at the office and there's 3 or 4 projects going on that you're involved with and you hear people having discussions about these things that you know about, it's very distracting because your mind focuses in on those things and picks out points and you lose your own train of thought. But if you work at a coffee shop where there's ambient noise and people aren't talking about things that you're concerned about necessarily, it's much easier to filter that stuff out and stay focused. So you really got to think about, it's not just about noise, it's not just about people, it's what kind of noise, who's discussing things, and if your mind's going to wander because these things are related to what you're working on, that's going to cause distractions. But if it's just ambient, general noise, it's a lot less distracting.
So how then, in a company where you have a lot of remote work, do you set up some sort of a system by which people can meet? I know you talk about the virtual water cooler in the book, but there's the larger issue of the workplace or corporate culture, a chance for people to feel like they're part of something bigger than I'm here in my office at home.
Yeah, you can do that online too. Physical location is not the only way for people to get to know each other. We set up a chat room. We use a product called Campfire. There's lots and lots of products that do this. It's basically a persistent chat room where anybody in the company is allowed to visit this chat room and is in the chat room all day long, sort of on the side of their screen. And people are having conversations about work, also about things outside of work. There's different rooms. We have a room for people who have pets at home, and people can talk about their pets and share silly pet photos. There's another room for people who are movie lovers and film lovers, and they talk about films and whatnot. And this is actually way better than having just a physical location, because you have now special interests among people in a company who can really go deep into those things without bugging people who have no interest in those things. And in a physical office space, you can't actually have that. So it's really cool to have these online segregated rooms where people can go in if they want. They're open to anybody who wants to join, but only people who have certain interests will join. And then they can go really deep and really get to know each other really well. It's very interesting. We've had people join our company who've never worked remotely before, They've only worked in office spaces around lots of people. And in just about a week or two, they actually say that they know people at 37 Signals better through this online chat room than they knew all their coworkers at previous jobs who they may have spent 5 years with right next to them physically. So culture can happen in a variety of different ways. It's not something that's just only happens. There's no magic only in a physical relationship like that.
All right, so that takes care of employee to employee and employee to manager contact in a lot of cases. But then what about employee to client contact? How do you let the client still feel loved when they're dealing with people in Sheboygan and Cleveland and Montreal?
It all depends on the work you're doing. When we were doing website design work, which is no different than consulting or no different than writing or a variety of other trades, I rarely actually met my clients. I might have flown out to meet with them once, perhaps, at the beginning of a project, but after that, we never saw each other again. We just delivered stuff online, and it works just fine. I do think it's valuable to have an initial meeting with somebody because the sort of the halo effect of getting to meet someone and seeing them and recognizing their face and hearing their voice and getting a sense of who they are, that carries on for many, many, many months. You can now picture that person in the email when they send you or when they write a message somewhere. You can just picture them saying it, and that really helps a lot. So it does help to meet at least once. But if your client is a client who wants you to be on site, or that your client is someone who wants to meet every week and that's just the way it is, then that particular job may not be a great fit for remote. I mean, I would encourage people to try, and it's tough sometimes because the client's paying you, but to try and say, hey, can you give us a shot at this? But I know it's difficult. So in many cases, if you just can't do it, if the client demands certain situations, then that's what happens and you can't make that particular thing work. So this is not an all or nothing situation, but there's a lot of times when you don't actually need to physically be around a client to show them work or discuss a project.
And one of the major keys for managers, as you point out, is stop managing the chairs. Manage the people and the work instead, and don't worry about who's in the chairs. I want to thank you for joining us today. Jason Fried wrote with David Heinemeier Hansen the book Remote, Office Not Required. David, thanks. Jason, thanks so much.
It's been fun. Thank you.
All right. That'll do it for today's exchange. You can find out more about the program and subjects and suggest guests at jeffexchange.org. You'll also find program topics and recordings on our Facebook page. We're also on Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Tomorrow on the program at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about the continued expansion of the Southern Oregon wine business. We'll talk about buying local agricultural products in the winter. And then at 9 o'clock, we'll talk about protecting the uncontacted people around the world, tribes who really have not had experiences with civilization as we know it. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. Our producer is Charlotte Duren. Our student assistant is Reed Newland. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thanks so much for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.